Hey, welcome back to The Good PM Life. My name is Sandy Lawler. I'm your host, and this is the podcast where we talk all things project management. So typically with our podcast episodes, it's just me talking. Well, today I've got such a big treat for you. I sat down with Kelly Hogg, who runs the Love Runs Deep charity organization. And what we're going to be talking about today is this annual event that they put on every year called Boot Scoot, which benefits youth camps. Well, I wanted to show you how project management parallels so many things in life, including charity events. So grab a coffee and take a listen. And I can't wait to hear what you think. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am so excited about today's episode.
I am thrilled to be here. I actually consider it an honor to be featured on your
podcast.
Well,
you are so sweet. Thank you so much. Listen, you know, this project management podcast is actually really taking off. There are a lot of people that are really interested in project management. And I thought we'd just kind of shift a little bit to talk about how project management is applied outside of the workplace. So I thought you and I could have a little chat about what you're doing with your charity. And I thought the conversation would actually be kind of interesting. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing as it relates to project management in your charity organization.
So my family has a nonprofit organization called Love Runs Deep. And basically what we do is we have different fundraisers throughout the year to just basically support our community, support different efforts, just different people in need. It's just a way for us to organize the money that comes in so that we can help whoever needs help.
Okay. And so how did you guys come up with this idea? How did you get things started?
So I actually worked in the nonprofit sector for many years. And I worked for a variety of organizations. I worked for a museum, and then I worked for a camp for children and adults with disabilities, and I loved it. I still do work for them today. They live in my heart. And when I was in charge of the different events. So I would coordinate their annual golf tournament, and then I would coordinate their annual gala in the fall. And I would always recruit everyone I know to come to the event, and that included my parents and different people from my church. And one year my parents were there, and I had hired a band from my church to play at the event. And so the parents of all the band members were there as well. And so all of our parents were sitting around a table and said, "Hey, why can't we do something like this for church?" And so that's where our Love Runs Deep, our event Boot Scoot, came from. And so we just started doing that for our church teen camps every year.
Wow, that's amazing. That is really, really amazing. And, you know, what you were just talking about, how you've done charity stuff, you've done for the museum, you've done actually a lot of project management work.
Yes.
Of course, maybe without getting paid for it, right?
Right. Well, you get paid for it, but not very much.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's just so interesting how project management shows up in all sorts of areas of your life.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about Boot Scoot.
Okay.
Okay. So tell me, like, what are your primary goals of Boot Scoot? Like, what is it that you all try to accomplish every year? You know, like, maybe talk a little bit about it. Like, how do you even measure success?
So the mission of Boot Scoot is to raise funds for our church youth camps. And when we first started, we were raising money just for scholarships. So if you campers can't afford to come to camp, we provide scholarships so that anyone who wants to attend camp, they're able to go. But then the event grew, and we started raising more money. So we were covering the cost of scholarships, but also now we can provide funds for different activities. Okay. So that way, as equipment gets used every year and gets damaged or destroyed or just, you know, gets old, we're able to buy new stuff. And in Texas, one thing that we really needed, and it was kind of a luxury, was to have like ice water stations at every single activity rather just in regions of the camp.
Okay.
And so we were able to buy water coolers for every single activity at camp.
Okay. So Tell me a little bit more about actual Boot Scoot. So like if somebody buys tickets to come to Boot Scoot, what is it that they expect? Just tell me about some of the activities at Boot Scoot.
So it is a dinner, dance, and silent auction. And it has grown. When we first had it, we had like 75 guests. Okay. It was basically just 75 of our closest friends church.
Okay.
We now have close to 500 people who come.
Wow.
Yeah. It has grown. We have changed venues several times to accommodate our growth. But we start off with a catered dinner, and we usually have barbecue, beef ribs. Everyone loves that. And then we'll transition then into a dance where we have a live band play. Then they take a break and we have a DJ. But while that is going on, we also have a silent auction.
Okay.
And this year we were really blessed to have Kendra Scott do a pop-up event.
Really?
So in the midst of our silent auction, we also had a Kendra Scott store. Okay. They have a great program to help nonprofits. And so everyone's able to shop there. And then as our event has grown and more people have come, we try to accommodate all ages so that they have a good time at the event. So we also have something called Kitty Corral. And that is basically a little miniature carnival for our kids to go. And we raise money by selling tickets for their games. Mm-hmm. We have a photo booth set up. And then we also have our bar sponsored, where we have beer and wine provided for our guests.
Wow. There's so many facets to this. And I'm hearing you've got a band, you've got Kitty Corral, you've got the silent auction, you've got the food. I mean, there's so many different aspects to make Boot Scoot super successful, it sounds like.
Oh, and we have a bake sale.
Okay.
Because we provide dinner with your ticket, but we don't provide dessert.
Okay.
You have to buy that at the bake sale.
Smart.
As a way to make more money.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That is really, really great. So you started out with 75 people.
Yes.
And it's grown to over 500 people.
Yes.
That's amazing. So when you're planning an event of this scale, let's talk a little bit about like the first steps that you take to get started.
Well, lessons I have learned along the way, I really need to think about how many people are we going to have, because I really need to think about the space of my venue. How many tables am I going to set up? How many chairs am I going to have? Then that kind of trickles down. Okay, for Kitty Corral, of those people who are coming, how many are children? So then we're able to determine how many prizes we need for how many games that will be played. And then that sort of thing. And then our auction, we try to look, okay, who do we have coming? We have men, we have women, we have kids, we have teenagers. So we try to collect auction items that everyone feels, we want everyone to go home with something. Mm-hmm. So we have auction items that range from like $5 up to several $1,000s. It just depends, so that everyone can afford something.
Okay. So you're basically taking a look at the scope of what you're going to provide,
yes,
right, to make this a successful event. And
yes,
so that actually just really coincides with understanding the scope of an actual project.
Yes.
And then you determine, okay, what's it going to take to deliver on that scope? You identify the people, you identify probably your volunteers. How many people is it going to take to perform provide the output of the scope of the project?
Yes.
So it sounds like you are planning an initiation phase all the way through closeout.
Yes.
That's great. Wonderful. So with that being said, let's talk a little bit about how you approach budgeting and resource management for Boot Scoot.
So when we first started, and like I said, it was a smaller event, it was basically my parents were providing the budget. But as we grew and I was able to really utilize some of my skills from the nonprofit sector, and that's when I would start seeking sponsorships. So now I have someone who sponsors the bar, who pays for the beer, and then we have the wine donated by a local vineyard. Shout out to Whitley Vineyards, one of my favorite sponsors.
That's amazing.
They give to us every single year.
So it really does sound like there is not just, it's not just you that is organizing the event. You have a lot of contributors to make the event successful.
Yes.
Right? So it's just like a project team.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
You do have the project manager, which you would be the project manager. And then you have your team, your resources,
yes,
that contribute to make the project successful.
Yes. Each area I've had to learn how to delegate. Like as the event grows, you have to learn how to delegate because you can't do it all.
Right.
And you have to, the people that you put in place, you need to make sure that they know what your expectations are mm-hmm. so that they can deliver. And then the people they have in come in underneath them, they know what, hey, this is what we're trying to do. So we're all on the same page.
Interesting. You know, you just mentioned about setting that expectation. Like, what is it that you expect, right? That really sets the tone for success when you have a lot of project team members. So would you be able to tell us, like, how many people really do you have involved in Boot Scoot per year, you think?
So for the volunteers, like, I know that I have 20 just in the Kitty Corral alone.
Wow. Just in the Kitty Corral alone?
Yes.
Well, it does take an army to wrangle the kids, right?
Yes. Okay. You have multiple people working yeah. multiple games. And then I have, so the event runs from dinner starts at 6:30. Then we wrap up around 10:30. So I try, because the people who are my volunteers, they're also, you know, paying dinner guests. So I want them to be able to enjoy the event as they're there. So I usually break them up into shifts. So they're only working like 45 minutes to an hour
yeah.
for the event. So like the bake sale, I'll have four different people and then I'll have four different shifts. So that's 16 people working the bake sale.
And are you managing all of these people throughout the entire evening?
No, I've tried to do that and it does not work. So okay. Now I have someone who is in charge of the bake sale. Like, you answer to them.
Great. So like, you've identified kind of like a team lead for the yes. different areas.
Yes.
That's actually genius, instead of just trying to manage it all on your own as the yes. project manager of the yes. event.
Well, next year is going to be our 20th year, and you learn these things as you go along.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you've done this now for almost 20 years. Let's talk a little bit about some of your biggest challenges in the 20 years or almost 20 years that you've put on this event.
So when we first started the event, like I said, it was a smaller, and we would do it on a Saturday night, and we would rent the event starting at 5 p.m., like from 5 to 12. That meant we would get there at 5 and we would set up for an hour because guests start arriving at 6.
Oh yeah, they're pretty excited.
Yes. Yeah. And when it was smaller, that was somewhat manageable, but it was still very hectic. And then as the event grew, and, you know, we went from having 15 auction items to having 100 auction items to having 200 auction yeah. items, setting it all out became very, very hectic. And it just wasn't manageable to do in an hour and a half, especially when you have your guest arriving and they're ready to come inside and you're not even finished decorating.
Right. And it sounds like you also need a little bit of an army to help you with these things, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we had to, like, problem solve.
Got it.
And figure out, how can we fix this? And we found that, this new venue, they will let us come in and set up on Friday for an extra $500. And when you think about how much work is done, $500 really wasn't anything. And we found a sponsor to pay for that. Sometimes even some of the people helping set up was like, I will pay money if I have more time to do it.
Right, right.
So we were able to find a sponsor to pay for that. So now we set up on Friday starting at noon. And when I think back to how we were trying to set up that event in an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and now it takes us 5 hours on Friday.
So it's very interesting that you say this, because you're doing some prep work, right?
Yes.
So there's obviously a lot of work that you do before the actual event occurs. Mm-hmm. But on the day of the event, there's a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Well, you only have so much time. So how do you make that day successful for everyone? Well, you've identified that you probably just need a couple of hours, a couple of days before, just to get everything set up. So a little bit of pre-work actually has kind of gone a long way for you, right?
Oh, yes. Tremendously.
Okay.
We print all of the auction item bid sheets ahead of time. So when I show up to the event, everything is ready to be set up. I also number the auction items, and then I number the boxes that they're put in. So now I can be like, hey, here's bid sheets 1 through 10. There's box A that has items 1 through 10. So they're able to take the bid sheets with the box and go set that up.
Wow, so like a little bit of like a process or a system that you've put in place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it took me years to develop that system.
Sure.
And I do love when I will have a volunteer tell me, like, oh, this year's setup was so much smoother than last year's. Great, because I'm constantly looking for ways to improve my processes and improve my systems.
Yeah, so just like some lessons learned. So like what we typically do with projects, at the end of a project, you always need to identify what worked well, what didn't work well, and what things do we want to do differently next year. That's actually such a gift to be able to gather that information and then apply it to your next project. And for you, it would be the next year's Boot Scoot event.
Yes. And I'm like nodding my head vigorously because that's exactly what I have to do. And even like this year, for the first time, which it embarrasses me to admit this out loud, but because I've been doing it for 19 years. But this year, when after the event, like everything made it back to my house, I took everything out of the boxes, all of our supplies, reboxed them up, and took an inventory of what we have. So next year, I'm not wondering how many wine glasses do I need to order? How many of this? No, I know that I've got this many wine glasses in stock. I have this many plates. Like I have all this stuff in, you know, in my inventory so I can quickly make that decision on what I need to order. And then I labeled everything. It's organized so nice and like I'm so excited for next year's event because I'm prepared.
As you're talking about this, it's the parallels between this event and what we typically do in a corporate or workplace type project. They're so closely related. So when you're talking about, okay, well, we've had the event. Well, the event does not end the project. That's not the end of the project. The end of the project is when you get everything organized at the end and basically put a bow around it, where you're organizing. In a corporate side, it may be updating documentation, putting it in the right spot, communicating to your stakeholders, identifying those lessons learned. Like there's a lot of things that need to happen after the actual event. So I find that also fascinating.
Yes. And tying the bow around it is my favorite part because that's when we get to give the money to the different camps. Yes. And so I was able to like email all of our camp directors and say, okay, this is how much money we raise. Tell me what you need. Tell me how many scholarships you anticipate having so that we can start writing checks.
I bet they are just so overjoyed getting those emails from you. You know, and honestly, this is really for the kids. So these are for kids who maybe just can't afford to go to a camp.
Right.
And this is their opportunity to actually participate in a camp. And we all know how much fun camp is.
Yes. And it's especially rewarding because usually I think camps run like $350. It really depends on which camp they go to. But it's really hard, especially in this economy, it's really hard for family members who have several kids. They may be able to afford for one kid to go to camp, but they may have four kids and that's a lot of money. It starts adding up, especially if a camp is in a different state. So then you have transportation involved, and it's very rewarding when parents tell you, hey, just so you know, my kids would not be able to go to camp without Boot Scoot.
I can't even imagine how good that makes you feel.
I'm getting emotional because it is. It's what keeps me going because after the event, there's some years you're just like, oh, I'm never going to do this again.
Right.
Because
it's a lot. It's a lot of work.
Too much. It's too much. But then that will come along, or you will see pictures from camp and you will see campers using the equipment that you bought. And it's just like, okay, that's worth it. This is why we do it.
Yeah. It's the reward at the end. Yes. And you seeing how this positively impacts a child's life, really. Yeah. I mean, and that is really wonderful. And I know that's what keeps you going. That's why you guys have been able to do this for almost 20 years.
Yes.
Because it is a lot of work. I mean, just what you've talked about so far, everything from securing the location, identifying the people, your teams, all of the work that goes into creating an event like this, it's a lot of work and it can get discouraging. Just like a project at work, you're working on this project for so long, you get kind of tired of it. Mm-hmm. Well, when you see the end product and you go live or you have a launch and you have a Boot Scoot event, I mean, it just makes it all worth it.
Yes.
That's really, really wonderful.
Yes.
Okay. Well, so now we've talked a little bit about like what the event is, who's involved. Let's talk a little bit about some of the project management tools and techniques that you've used throughout your 19 years of experience putting on this event. I'm very excited to hear about this because, you know, I've talked about on this podcast episode about the various tools that project managers use. And there's a lot of stuff out there, but I'm very curious to know what are some of the tools and techniques that I've actually worked for you as you're putting on this event.
So this is when I could really geek out because I love this kind of stuff. When I first started it, I was using Basecamp for my job. So I was like, ooh, I'm going to go create a Basecamp project. And I did that. And that worked really well. But I didn't invite anybody into that. It was just me. So it kept me organized. And then one of my volunteers said, hey, like, can we move over to a sauna? Because I like a sauna. So we did a sauna for several years. And that is when, again, I want to give credit to my volunteer. She's like, you know what? You should create a template so that you can just recreate this every year.
Well, that's genius.
Right? And it's one of those things, like, why have I not thought about that? So I created a template. And we since moved out of a sauna, and now I'm in ClickUp, which I'm just loving.
Okay.
There's so many different tools and automations and things you can do in ClickUp, and then you can invite guests in. But basically having a template, and I have, like, the different categories, like pre-planning, and then my to-do list for the venue, my to-do list for food and catering, my to-do list for the auction, for decorations, and I have it all down. And then I'm also able to keep track of my inventory of all my items, like, okay, or I will make notes, like, order keg. Okay, this year we only drank one keg. You know, some years I've ordered two kegs and then I have a lot of leftover beer and so it's just a waste of money. So I always keep track of how much wine did we drink? How much keg was used? How many bottled waters did we go through? That sort of thing.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So you used these tools to manage your tasks.
Yes.
Right. And manage inventory.
Yes.
Okay. And look, you know, you have to use the tool in the way that works best for you.
Right.
So there are a million features in every tool, but you're not going to use every single feature.
Right.
You're going to use the ones that work for you.
I think that is the most important thing, is figuring out how it works for you.
Yeah.
Because, like, Basecamp did not work for my volunteer. Asana worked for her. And then I just really liked the ClickUp platform better, and that volunteer is no longer with me. So now we moved over to ClickUp, and just finding out what you need and then using the features in that tool for you.
Super interesting, because it actually helps keep you organized, right?
Yes.
So it's kind of just like what we call a single source of truth. It is the one place where you have all your information and you don't have things scattered on Excel sheets and a Word document.
Right.
And you have that just really all in one place.
Yes. And then I love, like, the calendar feature. What I will do is I will go in and I'll create kind of like a waterfall, and I will start from boot scoot and then I will back up. Like, when do I need to have this done? When do I need to have that? And I'm able to go look at that calendar, and then I'm able to set reminders. And then, you know, one random Thursday in June, I'll get a reminder that, oh, you're 6 months out. You need to start sending solicitation letters for auction items from companies that give within the next 6 months.
Interesting, too. Very interesting. I love tools. I love tools that help us be more efficient, to be able to do our jobs better. And look, I also love that you tried a couple of different tools until you found the one that was working for you at that moment. And it doesn't mean that you're going to use ClickUp forever. It may mean that you're going to use ClickUp forever. There may be another tool that will come on the market that you will find will actually work better for your, you know, for your organization and for the Boot Scoot event. So I'm actually kind of curious if there are any tools out there that help organize charity events like this. So it's not a corporate project, but it's a little bit different. So anyway, just thinking, you know, I'm always thinking about different tools and what's the best way to do this. And look, sometimes an Excel sheet, it works perfectly fine for what you're doing,
right?
But when you've gone from 75 people to over 500 people, it sounds like an actual project management tool is the right way to go.
Yes, I do manage my volunteers in a Google Sheet.
Okay.
So I've got my form there and I just fill that in, and that works for me. And I think that's also something to be, like, just really cognizant about, is that you use what works for you, but don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid to use multiple tools.
Love that. Yes. Yes. The fear factor. Right? Because you're afraid. You're like thinking, I've spent so much time on this, setting this up. But at the end, sometimes it just doesn't work for you.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Totally fine.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So you just move on. You just try to find some other tool that will work best for you. Because really, in the end, it's really about the end result, right?
Yes.
And it'll be easier on you if you pick the right tool. And if it doesn't work, you just move on.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. So I want to talk a little bit about communication. So I've talked on this podcast so much about communication because it is probably one of the most, if not the most important quality that you must possess as a project manager. So I want to talk a little bit about communication. We talked about you have 500 plus people coming to this event. You have tens and tens of volunteers, all of the work that's done. How do you ensure clear communication among the team and the volunteers throughout your planning and execution phases? Let's talk a little bit about that.
So it can be kind of a bit of trial and error. And obviously this is going to be a little bit different because I'm not in a corporate environment, but I think it kind of applies in the same way as like, you have to know your audience and you have to know how they prefer to communicate, how they prefer to receive communication. Because so my volunteers, they, the age range is from 16 to 75.
Okay.
And so I have learned that for a certain group of people, they want to be texted their updates. Another group of people, they want to receive it by email. Another group of people, they want to receive the information on a Facebook post. We have announcements for ticket sales. We have announcements made at church verbally, but we also have announcements that go out via the church's email. But then I also, this past year, I started, I grabbed our email list from last year and I sent out an email this year too. It's like, hey, if you attended Boot Scoot last year, we've set our date for this year. And we actually got ticket sales from people who no longer attend that church. So they don't receive those emails anymore, but they still want to come to the event.
Interesting. So, all right. What I love what you said was the fact that you have all these volunteers and every single volunteer wants their information to come to them in some different way, right? Yes. Some want a text, some want an email, some just want a Facebook post. So it's very interesting because that is, it can be time consuming, right? It can be time consuming. And on a corporate project, you know, we do have some avenues. So we have email, we have meetings, we have Teams or Zoom. So there are different ways that we do communicate. And it's important because we all take in information in different ways. And I think it's important to understand what those are and then to set up processes to make that communication more effective, because you can't just say, well, I'm just going to text everybody.
Right.
Okay.
Oh no, well, I can't do that.
Yeah. You can't do that. That's you're not going to get the information up because your goal is to be able to communicate the information. So I love that point because we all process information differently. We all intake information differently. So I love that point. Okay. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about a story, some stories maybe that okay. you can tell us about, you know, cause things don't go perfectly, just like every single project, right? They just, something goes haywire, something, you know, happens. I want you to maybe tell us, give some examples or stories of when things maybe didn't go as you really planned. And most importantly, I want to talk a little bit about how you handled it.
Okay. So this makes me laugh because this was our fourth Boot Scoot and people still talk about it. They still bring it up. So as I said, we grew from 75, and the second year we had it at a different venue. And we had it the second and third year we had it at a venue and it was great, but they were like, oh, we're growing. We got to go to a new venue. So we went to this third venue, and when we had registration, we were kind of thinking about who our past attendees had been. So we're like, okay, you're adult, 13 and up, and then your kids, and then like for a certain age, and then some kids eat free. Well, we did not take into account that if you have 0 to 4 who eat free, that some of those 4-year-olds will sit in a chair.
Okay.
That just because they're eating free does not mean that they're not going to sit in a chair.
Of course. Right.
So when you have a registration of 300 people, because we jumped big.
Yeah, you did.
And you have a registration of 300 people and you're like, okay, well, I'm setting up so many chairs. But you have people who don't, the kids were eating free. We're like, we really don't need those numbers if they're free. And then all these children showed up who did not have chairs.
Right.
And we quickly found out that we exceeded the fire marshal limit.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So the manager of the facility came to me. So we have a problem. We have too many people in the building. And we...
Wait, and let me just... This is in the middle of the event?
Middle of the event.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And we had another issue going on at the same time that I was dealing with. I'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. This was a very infamous year. So in the middle of the event, I had to go to people and I had to handpick 25 people and say, I need you to go stand outside for 30 minutes.
Wait, you had people. You had to take them out of the event and have them stand outside?
Yes. Yes. And this was February, which is probably the coldest month for Texas.
Yes.
And it was like cold and rainy outside. And so thankfully it was covered. Chris, they would have just left. Seriously. But this is how, like, I love the people that come to our event because they love the event so much. They were willing to stand outside for 30 minutes.
Wow.
And then I had to go pick another 25 people to change places with them. So I constantly was taking 25 people all night long.
Wow.
All night long.
And that's in the midst of all the other stuff that you have going on, yes, right? During the event, right? Yes.
So, and then, you know, it's an event where it's like ants are scattering. Okay. Once the dinner is over and the band is playing, like people are moving around. It's crazy. And then we had told them that we had a silent auction and they had gave us tables, mm-hmm. but they did not take into account people walking around the tables. So we had bottlenecks everywhere. Oh. So it was just people were standing on top of each other. There was no flow to it. It did not work well. But that same year, when we're taking registration, we did not take into account how much 8 and 10 year old boys would eat. And we have all you can eat beef ribs.
Okay.
And we ran out of ribs.
I'm sorry, you ran out of food?
We ran out of food and we were charging $35 a plate. We ran out of food. Oh, so
8 to 10 year old boys eat a lot.
Yes.
Just check out people's grocery bills.
They also had a contest who could eat the most ribs. And I did not know until after the event when someone sent me pictures of plates of like 30 ribs stacked up on top of each other. Like there was a whole table that was just a mountain of ribs that these teenage boys had had a contest.
So I'm guessing that means that there were people that came to your event that paid.
Yes.
And didn't get to eat.
Yes.
Wow. That's rough.
Right. And I was mortified.
Of course.
Because here I am ushering people to stand outside in the cold. You have to stand outside in the cold and you don't get to eat.
So they're cold,
hungry.
And hungry.
Not the best place to be when you're asking them to open up their wallet.
Right. Right. Exactly. Because you still have the silent auction and they're thinking, I've already paid into this event and I didn't get to eat. I have to stand outside. And now you want me to contribute? You want me to donate to a charity?
Yeah.
And look, here's the thing is people are so sweet and generous. And I'm sure that it ended up being fine, right?
Yeah. In the end, it was okay. But like I said, that was our fourth one. We're going around 20. So 16 years later, people are still, oh, are you going to have enough food this year? Yeah. Like they still joke about it. They, you know, if I pay, am I going to get dinner? Yes, sir. You will get
dinner. You're going to have bake sale. If there's no more ribs. There's some goodies over there and a drink. So.
Right. Yeah. So that was, and we couldn't figure out, like, that was the thing. It's like, what happened? Where did we, because we did keep track, but we did not keep track of the number of four-year-olds.
Right.
Like, or like toddlers or young kids.
Right.
We did not keep track of that number because they weren't eating. So.
Right. You know, a 2-year-old is not going to eat the amount of a 20-year-old. Right.
Exactly.
Right. So, of course, you don't anticipate that they're really going to be eating a lot. But 4-year-old, maybe.
Yes. And so now I'm very, very diligent about keeping track of whoever comes. And even if, unless it is an infant, they get a chair. If it's a 1-year-old, they get a chair.
Okay, interesting.
Yes. Okay. I count for them to have a chair.
Okay.
Because I will not get into a situation where I run out of seats or we put too many people in the building again.
Right. Because you want people to return to the event every Correct. Year. Right. Yes. And it is a fun event.
Yeah.
And you want people to come. And if people don't have a good experience, just like with a product that you're putting out into the market, mm-hmm. you have this big project. And if you put a product out there and people are not happy with the experience, they're mm-hmm. not going to come back.
Right. And they'll tell their friends.
Exactly. So this is a, wow, what a year you had year four.
Yes.
Interesting.
So, but it was a hard lesson to learn, but once we did, that's what happened. And then now, you know, the next year we've used the same catering company. It's Risky's out of the Forest Stockyards. So we've used the same catering company and we talked to them next year, like, hey, we're not letting, you know, these boys come through. It's all you can eat, but don't let them have, you know, 7 ribs on a plate. And then we make an announcement before you can get seconds.
So controlling that resource. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yes.
Very, because you do have a budget, right? You right. have to, I mean, Risky's is a vendor.
Yes.
And you have a certain budget.
Yes.
Based off of the number of people that have signed
right.
up.
They only bring so many ribs. Exactly. And they kind of vary, like, it's all you can eat. So they kind of, you know, they have a formula of like how many ribs were. And they told us we're the only event where they've ever run out of food.
Well, you know, look. It's church people.
Right.
We like to eat.
Yes.
Okay. Potlucks yes. galore.
Exactly.
Risky ribs.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, you know, but we learn from it and, you know, we can laugh about it now.
Yeah. I'm sure you weren't laughing at the no. moment. Nobody no, does like, when you're dealing with an issue.
Again. Yeah.
Right. That's so funny. Interesting too. Mm-hmm. Just how you handle that situation mm-hmm. with grace.
Yes.
Because you do set the tone. As a project manager, you set the tone for every project. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, and I've mentioned this before in one of my episodes, you know, when there's a lot of turbulence on a plane you're flying, the first people you should look at are the flight attendants. Are they freaking out or are they just doing their job?
Right.
Oh, if they're just doing their job, we're good. That's how I kind of determine, like, if I should freak out on the plane, and it's always perfectly fine.
Well, I was freaking out that night.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I was the flight attendant losing yes, her mind.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And look, I mean, thing is you can't let anybody see that you're freaking out.
Yes.
Because then they're going to freak out.
Yes.
Because if you're just like, yep, I've got it handled. Yes, this has happened. This is unfortunate. It's okay. We got it handled.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are great stories. These are really great stories. And of course, now you can laugh about them,
yes.
but you weren't laughing at the moment.
But you know, also it's helpful because I do have some people who kind of get, well, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to pay for this, or why is my kid being counted? I want to give their seat to somebody else. And then I tell them, this is how I make sure that I don't run out of food. This is how I make sure that we don't violate the fire code. And, you know, this is a lesson I learned and this is how it is.
Great. Okay. So let's talk about team motivation. I just talked a little bit about how the project manager sets the tone for any project or any event. They see you, they watch you. If you are calm, cool, and collected, and you've got it handled, even in the midst of any issues that have come up, they're going to be calm and collected. If they see you freaking out, they're going to freak out, and you don't ever want that. So how do you keep the team motivated? I want to know, how do you keep a team like that engaged? Because it's quite a few people. And there are a lot of projects out there. You don't have that many people.
Right.
This is a significant amount of resources that you have in this event that happens once a year for 5 hours-ish. Mm-hmm. Right? So I want to talk about, okay, the team. How do you keep them motivated? Or is it just something that they also have the passion about with the camp? So tell me a little bit about that.
So with my volunteers, it is helpful. Like I do, if I do share, when we get those thank you cards, when we get stories, you know, from different parents about camp, like, hey, this is what you're working for. This is what this is all about. So I do share that. I also try to, because they're working very hard, I also try to always extend my thanks and gratitude, because there are times when I will get in the moment and I'm like, we're all in this together, right? We're all in this together. But then I have to remind myself, hey, they're working for me. They're working really hard because I'm asking them to, even though it's for a great cause, they're giving a lot. So I need to make sure that I show gratitude, you know, that I show appreciation for their work and for their effort.
So now that these volunteers, have they also gone to camp?
Some have.
Okay.
But not all of them.
Okay. So not all of them.
Yeah. Not all of them.
Okay. So the ones that have gone to camp, they understand the camp experience.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you've got people who just have a heart to serve.
Right.
And they want to do that. And they love kids. And they want all kids to have the same experience. Mm-hmm. So motivating them is interesting because they all have their own motivations of why they're doing something,
right?
They either just have a heart to serve, or this is something that's actually near and dear to their heart, just like you. So motivating a team is interesting because when the team members have heart in a certain project, do you think maybe it's easier to motivate them?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But it's also in how you treat them too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Gratitude, appreciation. Yes. They don't have to be there.
Because I have probably 4 to 5 volunteers that serve every single year who have no vested interest in camp whatsoever. They come to serve me.
Wow.
They come to help me. And so I try to make sure I take very good care of them, that I, you know, I let them know how much I appreciate them and their hard work.
Yeah. Cause it is a lot of work. And they, once you are involved in putting together a project or a program or an event like that, you understand what it takes because you're a little bit more behind the scenes, right? Like you understand, it's not just like, oh, somebody came and fed us and here's some table and chairs that were set up and you're good to go.
Right.
But it's so much more than that because you also have the band.
Yes.
Okay. Then you have the facility. Then you've got, you know, the people. You've got registration.
Yes.
So there's even a lot of work that goes on before the actual event happens.
Yes.
Probably, I would probably even venture to say at least 75% of the work happens before the actual event happens.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So these people that are volunteering, some of them probably are involved in the planning process, right?
Right. It's not just the 5 hours they're working that night. Yeah. It is planning. Like the band, we start talking in the fall before the event and, you know, what music are you going to play? And then they have practices and things like that. And I got to make sure, do you have everything that you need? Do you have the equipment you need? Do you have the people that you need?
Right.
And this is the same with the Kitty Corral. Because, you know, we have to start soliciting items for the games and the prizes. And then we have to make sure we have all the equipment for the games. And
you're kind of making me exhausted, Kelly. This is a lot of work.
It is.
Yes,
it is. And but like I said, I'm very, very lucky to have a great group of volunteers, a lot of people who come in and work and help me do it. So yeah. And you are a team. You are working together as a team. Everybody plays a part.
Right. And one part or one team member is no more important or less important than another, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really important to know. Just like on a project team in a corporate environment, everyone has a role and their role is important.
Right.
And the second you remove that role or that person, things don't go well.
Right.
So it's important to have the right people that have the right attitude and the right heart and to be able to show gratitude to them because they don't have to be there.
Right.
I know we're talking about a charity thing, right? But even in a corporate environment, nobody has to be there.
Right. They can move on
right.
to another position, another company.
Exactly. Right. And hearing a thank you, I appreciate you, goes such a long way.
Yes. And I think some people don't realize that. They think, okay, you earn a paycheck every week, so you don't need to be told thank you. That's not true.
Right.
Especially like different personalities. Some people, if you tell them thank you, they're giving you 100%. You say thank you, they will give you 120%.
Right.
They just want to be acknowledged and, you know, appreciated.
Yeah. Especially in an event like this where they really don't have to be there.
Right.
Right. So imagine working, spending time away from your family to help others and you don't even get a thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, these folks are not just looking for a thank you. But when you get a thank you and somebody shows gratitude and appreciation for the work that you're putting in, the fact that you're away from your family and the things that you want to do, because look, you know, they're working at an event that they could be going and having fun at.
Right.
Right. But they're working.
Yes.
But honestly, I have volunteered at this event and it's actually a lot of fun to volunteer too. So
yeah.
I've been on both sides where I've been just a participant and it's a lot of fun, but I've also been on the volunteering side and I love that as well. So, and it makes you feel good when you know that you are contributing towards something, you know, that's something that's really great for kids.
Yeah.
So let's kind of transition over to our last question. I just want to ask you about this. How do you ensure a smooth transition from when you're planning the event all the way to the execution on the day of the event? I'd like to know, there's a lot of work, we talked about this before, that happens in the planning stage, then you're doing all the work, and then into the actual execution of the day. So let's talk a little about that.
It is so important, it's vital that you stay organized. and that you have a timeline that you know, like for setup, you know, setups is from 1 to 5, and then you know what has to be set up, when it has to be set up, that sort of thing. And you, I have different setup teams, and all of that has to be organized. You have to be, and as the project manager, everyone is coming to you. Everyone is looking at you. And one thing that you had asked earlier is about like your team and everything. Something that I had to do was I now have an assistant so that people can come to me, but I can immediately delegate to her. So they're asking me, but I can give it to her. And so she is there with me setting up, and she is aware of the entire process, the entire plan. And so that we can ensure that that happens smoothly. So I have my timeline, I have my list, and then everybody knows where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be. But that's when I have to make sure I cannot procrastinate. I have got to be 100% prepared, because I have, you know, a lot of people coming to me, depending on me to be ready to go when I need to be ready.
Also, one very interesting thing that you just said is just, you talked about having an assistant, yes, right? And it just made me think about how you assemble a project team. Who are your key players? What mm-hmm. do you need? Yeah. Project managers do a lot, but we cannot do everything, right? We do need help sometimes too. So it's really critical to have the right people on your team, not just warm bodies, but the people who are going to be able to support you mm-hmm. and this event. So knowing your own weaknesses, right?
Yes.
And just the sheer amount of work this is. And knowing, like, you know what? I know that I can't do it all.
Right.
And at the end, it's not about you. It's about the end result.
Yeah.
And so what is it that you have to do to make sure that you get the end result that you're expecting and that other people maybe are expecting too, right?
Yeah. Know your weakness, but know everyone else's strength.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You're able to delegate certain things to certain people because that is their strength.
Yeah. Count on others, being able to lean on them, even if it's just for support.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's great. Absolutely.
That's great.
Wonderful. And I mean, this sounds crazy, but I have someone who was assigned to bring me a coffee. And it's not like, that sounds crazy. Like, I'm not like some higher up or whatever that, you know, oh, you're waiting on me, whatever. No, but and I didn't ask for it. She started doing it. And now that's her job. Every year, she brings me a coffee at 3:00 on Friday.
What a great, great position to be in.
Right? And, you know, and then we have someone who bring, that's something we started this year, is we bring in lunch for, well, I say lunch, we serve it at like 4:00 for our volunteers that are setting up. But it's like you find these areas of, because that's when people are getting tired and cranky. Mm-hmm. You find areas of friction. How do I fix that? And for example, our Kitty Corral, we have all of these wooden games that have to be assembled every year. Well, I make sure that we have tools on hand, because this past year they forgot to bring tools and somebody had to go buy power tools to assemble these games. So that is on my list for next year. I will have a backup set of power tools in case they're forgotten.
So it looks like you're basically identifying the risks.
Yes.
So I'm sure that you probably had that experience in years past when it was an issue, mm-hmm. right? And then because you had the issue, now you know how to handle it.
Yes.
So there's always that risk, and you've got to identify the risks. What if food runs out? What if we overpack the hall? Mm-hmm. What if we just have any type of issue?
Right.
Right. You can turn those issues into risk mitigation strategies at a later point, because you know that anything can happen, right?
Right. Anything.
Yes. All right. So as we close out today, I want to give you an opportunity to direct people to Love Runs Deep, where they can find any type of information about your charity organization.
Yeah, so you can find us on our website at loverunsdeep.org. We are also on Facebook and Instagram at loverunsdeeptx. I'm trying to think what we have coming up next. Probably around Thanksgiving, we'll have like a canned food drive, or one year we bought turkeys for different people. But basically we just try and find needs in the area. We try not to be like, I don't want to say canned food and turkeys are kind of generic, but or cliche, but we find needs in our area. One thing that we also really focus on, are natural disaster victims, but we don't just like, oh, let's gather random items. We will handpick families to give them what they need, because we have found in the past that so many people want to help and they don't know how to help. So they do things that aren't necessary, they think are helpful, but aren't necessarily what they need. We helped with flood victims in Baton Rouge several years ago. And a lot of people think, oh, they've lost everything, so I'm going to donate all my clothes and furniture and everything. And that's great. They do need clothes and furniture, but not immediately, because they have to rebuild their home. So what they really need are like cleanup kits and sheetrock and things like that before they can refurnish their home.
Yeah, so it really does sound like it's important for you, because of the experience that you and your organization have, to identify and help educate people about what's really needed. People have good hearts here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
People want to donate. You know, you see natural disasters, which happen quite often here in the United States. And so you see communities coming together, and it is so unbelievably heartwarming. But like you're saying, sometimes that's not what's needed immediately. Right. And you know, look, people are just doing it because they really do mean well, and it's so appreciated. But there is a process to everything.
Right.
So it's great that we have organizations like yours to help educate people about, like, they actually don't need clothes right now. We really thank you. What they do need is these kits.
Yep. Right? We pride ourselves on finding boots on the ground in the area. Like, what do they need? Like, in North Carolina, there are still people in North Carolina sleeping in tents.
That's unbelievable.
And what do they need? They're asking for boxes to go underneath their sleeping bags for insulation. Oh. So it's like things like that. Just finding organizations and people who can tell you exactly what the need is. Okay. So that's what we try and do.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. Well, thank you, Kelly, so much.
Thank you for having me.
This was absolutely wonderful. I love talking about this organization and what you're doing with Boot Scoot. I love talking about the parallels between an event that's not necessarily a corporate project and how it parallels a corporate project, right? So we've got charity event to the corporate project. And what I tell my listeners all the time is that you're doing projects all the time. You may not be called a project manager. You may not even have a corporate job that's a project management job, but you are continually working on projects where you have a beginning and an end. And so thank you again so much for joining us today. I'm very excited to hear what Love Runs Deep does next. I'm very much looking forward to next year's Boot Scoot event. Very much so. And I probably will be volunteering again, so you can sign me up.
Thank you for having me. I love your podcast. I've learned so much from you. You have convinced me that I am a project manager.
Yes,
I
could
probably go into corporate as a project manager. But we are looking forward to having you work at Boot Scoot next year. So
awesome.
Thank you for everything you always do to support.
You're so sweet. Thank you so much. All right. Was that outstanding or what? I was so excited to share this episode with you, because this actually provides you some real life examples of how project management applies to so many things in life. So I hope that you enjoyed it just as much as I did. So please take a moment to rate and subscribe to this show so that it gets out to more people aspiring to be project managers. So in the meantime, keep managing those projects and making things happen. See you soon.